This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another warning about Russian election interference. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Ross Akay on this Friday, August 3rd. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The Trump administration's intelligence chiefs are warning of Russian midterm election interference.
Businessman Bill Lee wins the GOP nod for governor in Tennessee. He'll face Democrat Carl Dean in November.
Auto emissions become the latest front in the California versus Trump war.
President Trump will continue to stump for Republicans this weekend, hitting Ohio tomorrow night.
To some extent, all of the midterm elections this year are going to be about the president's popularity. What we've seen in the special election so far across the country is that the most significant indicator of how the election is going to go is what voters in that district think about Donald Trump.
That's Reed Epstein of the Wall Street Journal. He'll be here in about 10 minutes with that story. Senior intelligence officials described Russian efforts to interfere in the midterm elections as deep, real, and ongoing, speaking at a time when the administration is facing criticism for not doing enough to address the threat of Russian election interference. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats says President Trump has directed intelligence agencies to make election hacking a top priority.
If we want to have any kind of relationship whatsoever in dealing with things of mutual interest, the Russians have to stop doing what they're doing.
National Security Advisor John Bolton says the administration is taking this threat seriously.
Since January 2017, the president has taken decisive action to defend our election systems from meddling and interference.
Trump didn't attend the news conference and hours later didn't mention his administration's plans to combat Russian interference during an 80-minute campaign rally in Pennsylvania. Instead, he again criticized the probe.
We got along really well. By the way, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. That's a really good thing. Now, we're being hindered by the Russian hoax. It's a hoax, okay?
The administration has been criticized by lawmakers in both parties over its effort to combat election interference. Construction executive Bill Lee has won the Republican primary for Tennessee governor in a race featuring four major candidates. The political newcomer spent $5 million of his own funds to defeat Congresswoman Diane Black, who was endorsed by Vice President Mike Pence, Beth Harwell, the Tennessee State House Speaker, and Randy Boyd, a fellow businessman.
I'm really proud of the campaign that we have run.
The 57-year-old Lee will face Democrat Carl Dean, who easily won his party's primary. He served 2 4-year terms as mayor of Nashville.
I am proud of the very positive message we kept throughout the primary election, and we're going to keep it positive. That is what I want to do.
Meanwhile, Republican Congresswoman Martha Blackburn and Democratic former Governor Phil Bredesen easily won their respective party primaries to become the nominees vying for Tennessee's open Senate seat. The two candidates will now battle in November's general election to replace Republican Senator Bob Corker, who announced his retirement last year. President Trump is heading to Central Ohio tomorrow to shore up support for a Republican House candidate who has struggled to raise money and is failing to motivate GOP voters. Reed Epstein of the Wall Street Journal takes a look at this special election, which will be held Tuesday between Republican Troy Balderson and Democrat Danny O'Connor. Reed, why is this election being held now?
Well, Pat Hebury had represented the Republican member of Congress, had represented the district for 18 years, and he left. Resigned his seat in January to take a job as head of the Ohio Business Roundtable. But part of the reason he left was he could sense the changing nature of Republican politics and in the Donald Trump era, and sensed that he was going to have a difficult election, re-election coming up in November if he stayed in office. So he left his seat, and so there is a special election to fill the remaining few months of this year next Tuesday. And then these same two candidates will face off again in November for the regular 2-year term starting at the beginning of January.
Reed, how has this district changed?
Well, like a lot of districts in the last year and a half in the Trump presidency, it has seen suburban voters rebel against Republicans in reaction to President Trump. And so it's a district that the president won by 11 points in November of 2016. But in the special election, it is a neck-and-neck race between Republican Troy Balderson and the Democrat Danny O'Connor. And the president's approval ratings are underwater. 46% of voters in the district approve of him, while 49% disapprove, according to a poll out from Monmouth University.
So is this race entirely about how popular or unpopular Trump is?
Well, to some extent, all of the midterm elections this year are going to be about the president's popularity. What we've seen in the special election so far across the country is that the most significant indicator of how the election is going to go is what voters in that district think about Donald Trump. Candidates on both the Democrat and Republican side have not done a whole lot to separate themselves from what voters in those districts think about the president. And in places where the president is not very popular, it's going to be difficult for Republicans to hold on to some of these seats.
We are speaking with Reed Epstein of the Wall Street Journal. Reed, how much money is being spent here?
Quite a bit. The Republican outside groups have spent a little more than $3 million on the race. More money is coming in every day. The Republican candidate, Mr. Balderson, has been able to spend about $500,000 of his own money that he's raised since the primary in May. The Democrat, Danny O'Connor, has done a lot better job fundraising. He's at almost $2 million spending on television since the primary. But there's less outside money from the Democratic side to help Mr. O'Connor.
What issues is Troy Balderson running on?
Well, you know, the biggest thing he's running on is trying to motivate Republicans in the district who support Donald Trump to come out and vote for him. The Vice President, Mike Pence, came and did a rally for him on Monday in the district. President Trump is coming Saturday night for a rally in the Columbus suburbs. And for Balderson, that's really the whole game, is getting Republicans and people who have voted for Republicans in the past to come out and vote. There's twice as many registered Republicans in the district as there are registered Democrats. But like a lot of places, people who have no party affiliation or independent voters make up almost half the electorate.
And Reed, the Democrat Danny O'Connor, only 31 years old. Is he trying to present himself as an alternative to the older folks that are populating Washington?
Well, he does. He calls him. He is like a lot of Democrats running for office this year. Has said he would oppose Nancy Pelosi, the septuagenarian Democratic Party leader. He calls for a new generation of leadership and makes sure to remind voters that he would be the youngest member of Congress if he wins the special election next week.
Thanks, Reed. Reed Epstein of the Wall Street Journal. It's 14 minutes after the hour. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. And this business update is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at michiganbusiness.org. Contact them today. The Trump administration is taking direct aim at California's auto regulations, proposing to end the state's ability to set its own fuel efficiency standards and to dial back Obama-era limits on tailpipe emissions. The proposal would eliminate the sharp increase in fuel economy mandates adopted under the Obama administration in collaboration with California. The rules require carmakers to boost fuel efficiency to 50 miles a gallon on average by 2025, thereby cutting emissions. The Trump administration wants to cut that to 37 miles a gallon, one of its biggest rollbacks yet of former President Obama's efforts to fight climate change. It says the prior administration overestimated how quickly consumers would adopt cleaner cars and trucks because, according to the Trump administration, they will cost more. California Attorney General Javier Becerra.
The earth is not flat and climate change is real. Can someone please inform the folks at the White House and our federal government of those facts.
The auto industry is leery of any proposal that stops progress toward better fuel economy for fear of a public backlash. Auto executives are urging the administration to negotiate a deal with California before finalizing its rules. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jen, the Russian ruble slid toward a two-week low after Republican and Democratic U.S. senators introduced legislation last night that Senator Lindsey Graham calls the sanctions bill from hell. It restricts new Russian sovereign debt transactions, energy and oil projects, and Russian uranium imports, and expresses strong support for NATO with a two-thirds Senate vote required for any effort to leave it. California's fire siege continues, with the Carr fire still only 35% contained. The death toll stands at 6 since the blaze was sparked last month. More than 125,000 acres turned to cinders. More than 1,000 homes have been lost. On the opposite end of the lower 48, southwest Florida coastal waters are abloom with an unusually heavy growth of red tide algae. It can kill marine wildlife and can cause skin irritation and burning eyes in humans. It's at high levels in Lee County, also affecting Sarasota, Charlotte, and Collier counties. The reward for information leading to the whereabouts of missing Iowa college student Molly Tibbetts has grown. Her mother, Laura Calderwood.
We have raised $172,000 that would be paid to you as soon as Molly is safely home.
Tibbetts was last seen when she left her boyfriend's Brooklyn, Iowa home for a jog July 18th. He was 100 miles away on a job site at the time and not a suspect. A symbolic milestone for Apple, which became the first ever U.S. company to have its market cap hit $1 trillion. Apple shares are up 22% so far this year. A hostage situation at a Channelview, Texas home ended without injuries after a suspect barricaded himself inside before eventually surrendering half an hour after allowing eight children to leave the home. Harris County Chief Sheriff's Deputy Edison Tokia.
The house appears to be a licensed daycare center of some type, and that's the reason for the kids in the house. The ages of the kids range from 14 months to 18 years of age.
Police say 19-year-old Jonas Dunlop had crashed his vehicle and ran into the house after firing two shots at deputies pursuing him on foot. Neighbors of a playground on the site of an historic African-American burial ground in South Philadelphia were horrified to find a black baby doll hanging from a noose there yesterday. Well, two young boys, one white, one black, have come forward and apologized, saying they found the noose and the discarded doll and decided to do something creepy. But completely unaware of the history of the property or the racist symbol they'd created, they're both under age 13, and community leaders say education is needed.
Hopefully they learned something. We'll see. Thanks, Rasa. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Well, if you're constantly checking your phone or laptop during class, it may hurt you. MarketWatch's Maria LaMagna has that story and joins us now. Maria, what's wrong with checking your device during class?
So in this, you know, recent research, the researchers actually divided students up into two groups and allowed them to use devices like laptops and phones and tablets during some school lectures and not in others. And what they found was that students actually performed pretty well when they gave them quizzes at the end of a class, even if they did have their devices with them. But the twist was, you know, when it came to actually retaining that information longer term and seeing if they could answer those same questions on a final exam, they actually performed worse. So their takeaway was, you know, maybe in the shorter term, you might not notice that checking your device is impacting you, but when it comes to the longer term retention, it actually does catch up with you then.
It's kind of a scary thing because I would think in high school they don't allow as much of the devices to be used, but college, certainly a lot of people are taking notes on laptops and doing nothing but looking at devices.
Exactly. And, you know, that in and of itself isn't a bad thing, but it just so tempting to click over onto another tab and, you know, sort of multitask. And that's basically what the researchers wanted to see, is that is multitasking really throwing you off with those devices? So if you're able to stay super, super focused and use your device solely for taking notes, you know, that's different from letting yourself sort of drift over and check other apps and get distracted.
What if you are surrounded by people who are doing that and you're trying very hard to listen to the lecture?
Totally. So that's actually something interesting I thought in this study, they did look at students who didn't use the devices themselves but were present in a classroom where other people were, and they were just as impacted by other people using them as they would be if they were doing that themselves. So it's really distracting for them to see, you know, two students laughing about something, or, you know, even just catching glimpses of what people are looking at. It's distracting enough to kind of throw off their learning enough to actually catch up with them on the final exam.
We're speaking with Maria Lamagna of MarketWatch. I wonder if students realize this and if there's anything they can do about it.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, trying to limit the distractions for yourself is probably the best thing you can do. And when it comes to what other people are doing, you know, maybe find a spot in a classroom where you aren't looking at other people's shoulders, if that's possible, you know, whether that means sitting in the front row or way over to the side or something like that. But it is hard, you know, obviously in today's day and age, everyone has their devices out pretty much all the time. So it is difficult. But I think limiting your own use as much as you can is probably the easiest thing you can do.
Maria, how does research like this in a classroom translate into the work arena?
So very much the same. Previous studies have shown that people check their phone about every 15 minutes, which is so much. And, you know, once you actually check, it takes about 20 minutes to return to the task that you were working on. So it's, you know, when you think about that and how much we're checking and then how much time it takes to get back focused, there really are similar takeaways for the work environment because, you know, not only might you not be doing as good of a job while you multitask, but now we know it could also impact what you're learning longer term in your own role.
Market Watch's Maria Lamagna. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
On this Friday, August 3rd, Jennifer Koshinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, some of our top stories and headlines. Intelligence chiefs warn of Russian election interference. Paul Manafort's bookkeeper testified that he used documents that inaccurately inflated his firm's income to obtain bank loans. Pope Francis calls for the abolition of the death penalty. And the raging debate in Australia, is it chicken parma or parmi? That story in about 20 minutes. Well, here's some unsettling news. The pension hole for U.S. cities and states is the size of Germany's economy. Sarah Krauss of the Wall Street Journal took a look at the situation and joins us now. Sarah, how did we get in this situation?
There's a lot of factors that have contributed to this issue, overpromises by politicians, excessive demands by some unions, the financial crisis in 2008, states and localities not making their required contribution to pension funds. So there's myriad reasons for how we got here. The challenging point is what to do about it.
Were politicians just not in tune with the economy when they overpromised things years ago?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, there was actually a time in which the state and local pension plans did have enough money to meet their liabilities. That was in the late 90s, early 2000s, but that deficit has since accelerated over time.
Our extended lifespan has also caused this problem to worsen, yes?
Yes. I mean, people are living longer. The baby boomers are a huge generation that are reaching retirement age. So there's an increased demand in terms of payouts as well.
Sarah, can you give us a couple of specific examples about either cities or states that are facing this crisis now?
Sure. So in Kentucky, there's a major pension plan that has about 16% of what it needs to fulfill its promises. New Jersey's pension system is in trouble as well. There are a number of different towns grappling with it, states rather. In California, there are a number of cases headed to the Supreme Court or before the Supreme Court that are testing a rule that says that benefits for pension or for public employees can't be cut. So the outcome of those cases could set precedent that may lead to other states looking to reduce benefits for retirees. In Kentucky, there's also been a sort of tussle over potential cuts for retirees. So this is something that's happening in a number of states across the country.
We're speaking with Sarah Krauss of the Wall Street Journal. Is it most likely then that governments will have to persuade workers to relinquish some of the money that they are owed?
There are a mix of options on the table. So one is, reducing spending on other things within states and towns and diverting that money towards pension payments. Another is convincing retirees to accept lower payments than they were promised. None of those are particularly popular options. And one of the places we went in the story was to Central Falls, Rhode Island, where retirees, police and fire, agreed to cut their pensions as much as 55% as part of a bankruptcy settlement in that town because it could not afford to meet its obligations. So, there's a number of very undesirable solutions.
Will this affect a certain age group more than other age groups?
Well, it's interesting. There are obviously older people that don't have a lot of time to figure out a plan B. So, if you're in your 60s and heading to or already in retirement and facing the prospect of cuts, that's pretty tough because you're going to go back to work. Where are you going to get an additional source of income? That is a big challenge. For those that are older retirees, they may die before this really comes to head in the city or state in which they live. So it's sort of a mixed impact depending on how old a worker or retiree is.
Do you think the younger workers today will never expect any kind of pension anymore?
It depends on the role. I mean, there are some current workers that are already having to participate in altered retirement schemes. So instead of a traditional pension that guaranteed a payout, they're being put into more 401k type arrangements where they are charged with saving for their own retirement. There is not a guaranteed payment at the end. So you're already seeing some states and towns make changes to the retirement benefits that they offer because they've learned that the pension arrangements that they've long had are not sustainable.
Is this now a political issue in a lot of states?
Absolutely. It's a very divisive issue, and there isn't a lot of consensus on the best way to deal with it. And some taxpayers feel like they shouldn't be on the hook for these payments. Some former public sector workers or retirees feel like, well, I signed on for this job and accepted lower pay with the expectation of these retirement benefits. So it's definitely pitting politicians and taxpayers and public workers against each other in many cases.
Sarah Krauss of the Wall Street Journal. It's 21 minutes before the hour on this morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay. It's time now to go beyond the headlines. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories he'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you were here at this time yesterday morning, you'll remember I was telling you about the small piece of good news in a week full of really bad news for residents of a California town dealing with wildfires after a 14-foot python that had escaped during the fires was captured and returned to its owner. Unfortunately, despite this being a story about one less large snake running amok on the streets, Jen didn't see it that way, and her last words to me were, "I hate you." Today, I try to make amends with a similar story about cuter animals that I hope will get a different reaction. As the car fire continued to rage this week in Redding, California, the blaze also managed to create an unlikely friendship between a cat and a chicken.
Yay!
The two animals surprised firefighters Monday when they were spotted huddling together in a doorway for safety and support as fire continued to rage on in their neighborhood. Fire officials say that the cat and chicken were suffering from multiple burns. Firefighters gave them water and placed them in the same crate together to take them to the veterinarian. The bird and feline are expected to make full recoveries.
Now that is a good animal story.
There you're smiling. And here's the best part about that story, or in just another part of that story. The chicken, thankfully, was not eaten by the snake. Because remember we told you that the snake's owners...
Stop talking about the snake. Let's just talk about the chicken and the cat. I like it.
Said that it likes to feast on chickens. So.
That's great.
So thankfully, both animals were safe and found and are going to make full recoveries.
I still hate you, but that's okay.
Slightly less. Maybe 1% less than yesterday. And with the summer concert season in full swing, you might go to great lengths to cross the country to see your favorite artists in action. However, don't do what this guy did. Prosecutors say an Arkansas man who is not a pilot has been charged with trying to steal an American Eagle jet from Texarkana Regional Airport to fly to an out-of-state rap concert. Miller County jail records show that the 18-year-old was being held on commercial burglary and attempted theft of property charges. The Texarkana Gazette reports that the man was arrested inside the cockpit before dawn on July 4th. The music fan told police about his foolproof plan, which included jumping an airport fence and flying the plane himself because he didn't think there was much more to piloting a jet than pushing a few buttons and pulling some levers.
Right.
Bond was set at $25,000. Yeah.
I think it's a little more complicated to fly a jet than push a few
buttons. Just a little bit. But, Mike, the question is there anybody, because we found out earlier this week that you would commit fraud, basically, to get a college basketball game put on at a bar or a restaurant that you were going to that night if your favorite team was playing and you wanted to watch them on TV. You admitted this in front of the entire country. Now, the question is there somebody out there who you would then, you know, steal a jet to go fly and go see? Let's say Prince was still with us and you know, was going to have his final big concert and you wanted to fly to Minneapolis to go see him. Would you do that?
No. It's a different thing. Okay. Totally different.
Yes. Yeah, I suppose there's a different set of skills involved.
Sports is like a one-off, like
a
lifetime experience. If it's a big game, it's different.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm glad we've set the line. Yeah. We have the line in the sand, which you will not cross.
Felony, yes. Stealing a plane, no.
Right. Okay.
I have my limits.
Different kinds of felonies for different kinds of people.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks, Mike. It's 13 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
We'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the show, Untuck It. You know, it's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. Untuck It makes shirts specifically designed to be worn untucked. A casual shirt that's not too long and not too short. It's just right. And not only do they look good, they feel great. And if you're a woman, by the way, wishing you can have one of these, well, Untuck It now makes shirts for women, too. Log on to untuckit.com and check out all the new arrivals. Use the promo code GORDONDEAL for 20% off your entire purchase. You can also visit one of Untuckit's over 25 retail locations across the country. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Use the promo code GORDONDEAL for 20% savings. Again, untuckit.com and use the promo code GORDONDEAL for 20% savings.
Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa K. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Well, new concerns about those hand sanitizer dispensers that have been placed in hospital rooms and hallways for staff, visitors, and patients to use. Research shows these alcohol-based disinfectants helped battle staph infections in patients and certain kinds of drug-resistant bacteria, but other infections caused by bacteria that affect the digestive tract, bladder, heart, and other parts of the body have increased over the past 10 years. Now researchers say they may have found the cause, the alcohol content. New research published by Science Translational Medicine shows that several strains of these bacteria have begun adjusting to alcohol-based hand sanitizers. They're not resistant to the alcohol, at least not yet, but they've become more tolerant of it. The bottom line, soap and water should be our number one protection, both in hospitals and for personal use. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Jan, Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, says Russia is still trying to interfere in the U.S. political system and says President Trump has specifically directed the intelligence community to make election hacking a top priority.
It goes beyond the elections. It goes to Russia's intent to undermine our democratic values, drive a wedge between our allies, and do a number of other nefarious things.
So a bipartisan group of senators has introduced legislation that would impose hard-hitting sanctions against Russia. It would require a two-thirds majority Senate vote to allow the U.S. to withdraw from NATO and would require the State Department to determine whether Russia is a state sponsor of terrorism. In a statement, co-sponsor Lindsey Graham says the current sanctions regime has failed to deter Russia from meddling in the upcoming 2018 midterm elections. The National Archives and Records Administration says it's going to take until October to complete its review of nearly a million documents on Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's time as staff secretary for President George W. Bush. Texas Senator John Cornyn calls Democratic demands for even more documents a stalling tactic before the midterms.
For some of our Democratic colleagues, there will never be enough paper. You will never be able to produce enough to satisfy them. That's because five of them made up their mind even before the nominee was named that they would vote against anyone that this president nominated.
The FBI is offering a $10,000 reward for a Pennsylvania man who threatened to kill President Trump. Police have been searching for 26-year-old Sean Christie since his June Facebook post about shooting Trump in the head, canvassing the area near Wilkes-Barre, where Trump held a rally last evening in support of Republican Senate candidate Lou Barletta. Air conditioning is not pervasive in Europe, and the heat wave across the pond is shocking locals and tourists. Forecasters say the all-time temperature record of 118 degrees in Athens could fall in the coming days. The current forecast for parts of Spain and Portugal is 116 today and tomorrow. Disney's live-action Christopher Robin's expected to top the box office in its opening weekend. Other first-run films include the comedy The Spy Who Dumped Me, Fox's horror thriller The Darkest Minds, and Dinesh D'Souza's pro-Trump documentary Death of a Nation.
And will you be going to the movies this weekend?
Yeah, I might go to that spy movie. That hottie from Outlander's in it, so, you know.
Okay. All right.
Good place
stuff.
To cool off.
Enjoy. Thanks, Rasa. Should chicken parmesan be known as parma or parmi? That's one of the many controversies facing Australians who believe their slang is a defining characteristic. The Wall Street Journal notes that Australians modify words with cute-sounding suffixes more than any other native English speakers, which linguists say reflects traditional Australian values such as equality and informality. The pronunciation problem isn't just testing friendships, it's reaching the highest levels of government. The Premier of Victoria recently created a poll on Facebook to ask his constituents their preference, parma or parmi. The poll garnered 32,700 votes and 81% went for parma. There are other parma dramas as well. Australians can't agree on whether the fries should be served under the chicken or to the side. Some prefer ham on top, others would skip it. The vast difference distances in Australia, which is about the size of the continental U.S. with about 8% of the population, account for some of the differences. In Victoria, which includes Melbourne, Australia's second largest city, people typically say parma. In South Australia, which includes Adelaide, Australia's fifth largest, it's parmi. Also, Australians have mushies for mushrooms, reach for their sunnies or sunglasses, and call for fireys or firefighters in an emergency. And Bob Hawke, the former Australian Prime Minister who famously set a world record for fast beer drinking, is sometimes referred to as Hawkey. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.